Outdoor Thing today. It is the last day of January, and we are here to talk about the championship weekend. Championship Sunday morning, Ryan, here with you. We'll talk about that. A couple other things we'll discuss as well. You check out Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and the iHeartRadio app under the podcast section. Ryan, how's it going? Happy birthday. You're now out of your you're now out of the 20s.
I appreciate it. Yep, I am now officially a 30-year-old man. So, you know, it's all downhill from here now is what they tell me, but, yeah, going good. Good stretch of the last like six games, shoot, probably even like eight football games, we've had, here. So that just means that the Super Bowl is probably gonna be a lame duck of a game because we've had such good games leading up to it.
Could be. How was your trip to Vegas?
It was fun. We had a good time. It was actually just Jamie and I, one of my buddies, I was going to meet us up there, wasn't able to, but fun time. Actually came back with a little bit more money than we left with as far as the gambling money. Obviously, you know, still spent a good amount, but had some good success at the tables, had a little bit of success at the window, not as much as I would have liked, but it was still fun and a good time all around and a good way to close out the 20s.
Well, that's good. That is good. That's good. I always want to come back with more more money. Was it crowded there? Were there a lot of people there?
Not a whole lot. We went we got there like Thursday, like around lunchtime, like around noon. And then we left like Saturday, kind of early evening. And it was starting to fill up a little bit Friday and Saturday, but it actually wasn't too crazy. Even a couple of our Uber drivers, like, yeah, we thought it was gonna be a little bit more busy than it actually is. He said, you know, maybe because next week, obviously they have the Pro Bowl and the NHL All-Star game there. So they're expecting, obviously, the next 2 weeks with that and the Super Bowl to be pretty popping. But it wasn't anything crazy, you know, pretty normal weekend. And lucky for us, we didn't run into Damon Arnett in Vegas. So that was good. We were able to avoid that. So, you know, that was a plus for sure.
Yeah, I he needs some help. That's a sad story. That's a guy with a lot of talent, but he's just had a lot of mental issues and he needs to get some help. Some people need to get to him. Cause that's a sad story right there. All right, we'll get to the football. We'll just start with what it was. The Bengals. They're Pat Mahomes. I don't know if you saw this. He's 34-0 or 38-0 in games where he's got a 14-point lead. Or he's 38-2, and the two losses come against Joe Burrow in a span of a month. 39-2 with a 14-point lead against in his games, and the two losses are to Joe Burrow, and it happened on January 3rd and January 30th. Really, just a surprise that Mahomes played one of the best halves of football he's probably played. He had a QBR at 98.2, a near perfect first half, and it all changed when they got too cute down at the goal line at the end of the first half. They pretty much that's a we have no respect for you as an opponent. I look at it, you just kick the field goal, you go up two scores, or you go up two touchdowns, 14 points. If you do that, you're probably I don't think the Bengals are coming back after. If you go up 24-10 at the half, you give them some life as they stop them. And the Bengals, like they did in the first game, come back from a double-digit lead. And in the second half, they gave up 3 points in the second half again, the same thing they did in the first meeting. And Lou Armaduo, whatever he does against the Chiefs in the second half for a defensive coordinator, let the rest of the league know, because he stuffed them twice. Whatever halftime adjustments he's done has worked. Mahomes was terrible in the second half, running around in the I got a lot of thoughts on him on Mahomes, but just a shocking comeback by the Bengals. Burrow didn't do too much; just took what the defense gave him. They made plays. The defense made plays. And so are we changing the overtime rules this week? Or was the NFL overtime sufficient for everybody since both teams touched the ball this week? Are we changing the overtime rules still?
You know, that
argument kind of went by the wayside as soon as Cincinnati picked that ball off. But, you know, as soon as the coin toss happened, everybody was, you know, there's a little bit of rumblings there. But, you know, so since it was the outcome that everybody wanted, I guess it was okay. But otherwise, then they need to be changed when it's not the outcome that the majority wants. But yeah, no, you're right about the Bengals and Pat Mahomes. I mean, if I didn't know any better, I would think he was shaving points or something in that second half. The way he was running around and just not making any decisive plays one way or the other. I mean, we had talked about just last week and seen last week where if he didn't have anything downfield, he was taking off and using his legs to make plays and gain a couple extra yards. You know, they had a spy on him, but you can't tell me that who was it? I think it was Hubbard that they had spying him, that he can't get 4 or 5 yards on that guy, you know, every now and then when he needs to make a play. He was just retreating backwards, running side to side, trying to make the play with his arm. And it was just, it was like he had the yips and he started pressing a little bit and wasn't thinking clearly to try to make some plays there in the second half, using his legs, using his athleticism. But getting back to your point, you know, at the end of the first half, I don't know that you would say that they don't necessarily have any respect for their opponent trying to go for the touchdown. If anything, I think maybe they're just trying to put the nail in the coffin. And if you're up, it would have been 28-10 at that point. You know, it would have been a pretty hefty lead. And so, you know, and then you're thinking maybe you can get a double up or something of the sorts. But again, I think it was a case of Kansas City. We've seen this time and time and time again of just trying to get too cute when it gets down to the nitty gritty, or especially inside. You always see them kind of get a little too cute inside, like, say, I guess the 10. They try to run these little gadget plays or try to do a little too much. Andy Reid said he took blame for the play call. Mahomes took blame for not making the right decision and trying to just throw the ball away, see if they can get one more play in to kick the field goal. So, you know, take what it's worth there from both of those guys. But credit, again, to the Bengals. Credit to their defense. Credit to Joe Burrow, who, again, I mean, there was numerous times where there was four guys on him and he was scampering away and making a play with his legs. And the dude just doesn't quit, took a couple big hits and just gets up and keeps on trucking. I mean, we haven't seen, you know, a dude be able to do that, you know, and just get absolutely
All right. So we had a little technical difficulty here. We thought more got recorded than what did. So we're going to get into a discussion on if the Bengals are going to be more talented than the Chiefs. Yeah. The Bengals are the less, do you think they're less talented on offense?
Well, see, that's the thing. That's what I was saying. Like, you know, I started off saying far less talented, but when you look at it, I mean, obviously having CJ Uzama come out early in the game was a tough blow to them. But I mean,
especially if you bet his overs.
Yeah. I saw a couple of people that did that. Yeah, that's tough. If you go, you know, position by position, I don't know, you know, I'm at the running back position, I might give the nod to the Bengals. The wide receiver position, I might give that nod to the Bengals as well, because, you know, you got Jamar Chase and T. Higgins, and people keep forgetting about Tyler Boyd, me being one of them as well. So, you know, I don't know if they really are that much less talented or even if at all.
Well, they definitely have, I think, explosive. They can match the explosiveness at the skill positions, as Kansas City has. And then they also have a quarterback that does enough and is good enough to win. And like, he didn't, like, yesterday was the most I think Burrow's probably scrambled all year. And he got in the fourth quarter, those key avoiding the sacks there when he, like, got away from Chris Jones twice somehow and got away from those and scrambled for two first downs on third downs. That was big. And the Chiefs the Bengals defense is good. I like Logan Wilson when he was coming out. Trey Hendrickson was a good pickup they had there in the offseason. But to Jesse Bates, I've been talking about him all year. He's a great safety and he's definitely getting paid. And they signed a bunch of 1 year guys like Awuzie, who was from Dallas, Eli Apple, who literally every fan base that he's played for from the Giants and Saints hates him, but he played well with the Bengals. They signed Von Bell on a 1 year deal. DJ Reader, I think they got on like a 1 year deal. Like, they did shrewd moves on like 1 year deals, and guys have been playing well there. And I also think the Chiefs defense is good. But again, I also think that This is another asset where I'd say the Chiefs did more to lose the game than the Bengals. Obviously came back to win it. When you come back from 18 points down in the first half, you're going to have to do something to win the game. But also the Chiefs, they just peed down their leg. They soiled themselves yesterday. You cannot pull a 21-3 lead at home. You got Mahomes and these guys, they soiled themselves yesterday. And Mahomes was, as we said, just running around like he didn't know how to play the position sometimes, just like running 25 yards back like he's some dude in Madden yesterday and then going to hit the circle button and just chuck it up there. Like what he did in the second half, as you said, point shaving, whatever you want to call it, was really shocking. And how they couldn't figure it out on the offensive end, on the offensive side and everything. I was floored at how the Chiefs just forgot how to play football offensively.
Completely. Like I said, and the way things were rolling in the first half, you're like, okay, you know, this is, you know, maybe this was a nice story for the Bengals. Everyone kind of jumped on the bandwagon, wanted to see Joe Burrow continue the ride. And you're, you know, they jump out to the big lead and you're like, okay, maybe the Chiefs was the right side the entire time. And then, like you said, they come out the second half and just forgot how to play football, just couldn't make any plays, kept trying to run the ball on first down. That wasn't getting them any yardage or anywhere. You know, it was baffling. It was wild to see. And it's a good thing that's, you know, they're going to be back in this position, I think, you know, at least a couple more times, but I think it's a good thing that they got the Super Bowl win, you know, a couple years ago against the 49ers. Cause if not, we're looking and talk about this team totally differently, I think, right now, if after going to four consecutive AFC championship games and losing two of them, this one in, you know, terrible fashion. And, you know, so like I said, it's a good thing that they got the first one. Cause who knows how the narrative would shape around the team right now, if this was their fourth consecutive loss in the AFC championship or, you know, even just a loss without a Super Bowl win, in the last two trips.
I mean, they've made the Super Bowl two out of the last 3 years and 4 years in the AFC championship game. Yeah, I mean, this is bad, but I still look, if you ask next year who the front runner to be in the Super Bowl for the AFC would be, I think everybody would say the Chiefs.
100%. Like, 100% agree.
And yeah, you could go from like a legacy of Mahomes. He's in his fourth year. Like the worst thing he's done is lose in a championship game when he's been the quarterback. So pretty much he's guaranteeing you a trip to the conference championship game right now, which I know. We could talk about like the Brady stuff and what's going on there, but Brady played in what, 14, 13 or conference championship games, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Like Mahomes is on track right now in his career to match that. Now, is he going to win 7 Super Bowls? I would say probably not. Will he win probably another one at least? I would say yes, maybe even 2. Who knows? But like we didn't think that someone would be able to potentially match Brady for his conference championship games. There's a guy right now that is literally on pace to do that. Or if his career trajectory is what we think it is, it's going to do that. Now, the AFC is tough. There's a ton of good young quarterbacks in there. There's a lot of good teams out there, too. But he's telling you pretty much the floor for your season is going to be a championship game. And not just reaching it, it's going to be a home championship game because you're going to be the number one or number two seed. So, like, that's what the floor for Mahomes is right now, which is, you know what, sign me up for that floor because that's a pretty good damn floor.
You know, yeah, you're not totally wrong too, but eventually, you know, like I said, it's a good thing they got that one because if not, eventually you're thinking, all right, are we ever going to be able to cross that threshold? Are we ever going to be able to, you know, not just be happy with an AFC championship berth that we're hosting at home? Are we ever going to be able to make it to the Super Bowl? Are we ever going to be, you know, when we do make it to the Super Bowl, can we win it? So I get what you're saying and you're not completely wrong, but at the same point, like, you know how fan bases are, you know how organizations are, you know how the media is. Eventually it would have been, you know, can this guy get the job done? Yeah, he's able to get here. Yeah, they're able to do this, that, and the other. But are they able to, you know, cross the finish line and be able to bring it home? So, like I said, I totally agree. They're probably going to be here again next year, probably for the foreseeable future. They are going to be the favorites going into each season or close to it. But at the same time, it's like you still got to kind of ask the question a little bit. Like, is one the only one is he going to – that he is – he is the one that he got going to be the only one? I don't think so. But like I said, if it wasn't for that one, I think the narrative might be changing just a little bit around the Chiefs, and not just Patrick Mahomes, but the Chiefs and Andy Reid as a whole.
Well, you could look at the same thing of Andy Reid. This is what he did with the Eagles, and he just won a Super Bowl.
Agreed. Yeah,
like,
no, I agree.
The coach he faced in the Super Bowl chokes harder in big games than he does, and that's why he won. And we could get to him in a minute. But also the thing, too, is, yeah, people in Kansas City are not, like, the expectations for the Chiefs are not just to make the AFC Championship game. And they're obviously pissed today that they're not going to another Super Bowl. They have Super Bowl or bust every single year, but what I was saying is the floor is that low is you're going to a championship game. So it's going to be, that's what he's pretty much telling you that he's going to be. And look, it's a lot of the same things were said about Aaron Rodgers. When did he win his first Super Bowl? 4 years into the 4 years into his career, 3 years. Mm-hmm. I know Mahomes won it in his second year, but you're thinking, wow, the Packers and Rodgers, they're going to be here every year. How are they going to do that? Now he didn't go to four straight to start off his career. You thought Aaron Rodgers would at least get to one more Super Bowl, and he hasn't gotten to a single one. Mahomes has already gotten to one, but the same things could be said about, or is being said about Rodgers when they beat the Steelers, that are saying about Mahomes. And you could say that Mahomes has had a more successful career just on the fact in his first 4 years that he's gone to two Super Bowls rather than Rodgers has won.
Mm-hmm.
On that, but yeah, the Bengals preseason to win the Super Bowl were like 150-1, the second biggest odds since the Rams in 1999 to win, and they just find a way, and it's because Burrow leading them. And like, I don't even think Zach Taylor's a good coach. They were about to fire him last year, but I think he's like an average at best coach, but he's finding a way to get it done. So does this prove all the people that are like, oh, you go to the Sean McVay, or you hire Sean McVay's friends, that like, oh, one of them's in the Super Bowl, like that it wasn't a bad hire? Or are like people still mad? Are people still like, oh, are still people mad about that?
No, I think it's you have to, only coaches that were on the Washington coaching staff in 2013. Those are the only coaches you can hire.
Okay. All right, that makes sense then.
Yeah.
But, all right, and then to the Rams game. I've also taken a look at some Super Bowl props that we can get into after this. They're already up there. Let me tell you, there's a lot up there, a lot of specials, and a few have already caught my eye this morning because I have nothing better to do. But the Rams, I would say things so far looking pretty good on that Matt Stafford trade as he leads them. From a come-from-behind victory, they are down 10 in the fourth quarter, comes back, leads them to a 20-10 win over the San Francisco 49ers with a nice little assist from Kyle Shanahan yesterday, and a nice little assist from the safety Tart, who I do feel bad for because that guy, he is a really good player, and he just said I was reading what he said in the post game, and he said, I saw it coming to me. He goes, oh man, Stafford messed up. And like, he saw it in, and he's just like, he doesn't know how he dropped it. And I would agree with him. I think a lot of people don't understand how he dropped it, but it happened. He's like, I didn't drop a pass in practice all week, but what does that really do when you can't show for it in a game? I feel bad for that guy, but still, there were still 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Obviously people will point to that and they'll remember that was the big play. But even if they go down and like kick a field goal or score a touchdown, whatever it was, the Rams could have came back from that. But that was definitely a big turning point. I feel bad for him. But Kyle Shanahan, I think the game changed. A lot of people would agree or that when you have fourth and two at the Rams, like 45-yard line, McVay gives you a gift for challenging a fumble that didn't even look like it was a fumble. And they have that challenge. He has time to think about it. And they run out there like they're going to go for it. And you could easily tell within, 5 seconds when they were out there on offense that they weren't going to run a play. Yeah. They're just going to try and draw them off sides for 20 seconds. It didn't work. And they go out to punt. That's, to me, Shanahan, we've talked about this before, he's not a good coach when they're leading, blew the Super Bowl, practically almost blew the Cowboys game. And just down the stretch, he's been poor. Now he's 3-2 in playoff games when they have a 10-point lead the rest of the NFL before the what is like 24-0, I think, in the end of something like some ridiculous number before the Chiefs game. But just he just coached scared, coward football, punted, and that gave the Rams life, and they go on and win the game. Like, I don't know how you punt the ball. How you punt the ball in that situation. You're on your other, you're on the opposing side, 45-yard line. Go for it. Go for it. Like, what do you just go for it? I don't get it. I don't get it.
Completely agree. Yeah. I mean, that was a lot of the talk on Twitter as well was, you know, it was kind of a pansy call to just try to draw them off sides. And it wasn't even believable. They got to the line with like 15 seconds to go on the play clock. And so you could tell from a mile away that they weren't going to try to snap it or run a play or anything. And I agree. I think that was a big turning point and a point where you can really put the nail in the coffin. Obviously, like you said, the Tart play where he drops the interception, you can look at that play because that would have, you know, pretty much sealed the deal on it. But there were still other things along the way that you could have sealed the deal, you know, a lot longer before that wouldn't have come down to that play. So it's tough when, you know, you get in that position when you're Tart and you just keister up a little bit and just totally, you know, miss the pick. Again, you're completely right. Kyle Shanahan, there was numerous chances where they could have pulled away and essentially separated themselves from the Rams and made the lead a little bit, you know, insurmountable, you would assume. But you really got to start asking your questions about Kyle Shanahan. I agree. I mean, I think Jimmy G did a fine job. You know, it wasn't spectacular. I don't think he was terrible. Obviously, that last pick, he's just trying to make something happen to where he's not getting sacked or taking any more yardage loss than he needed to. Or that he already did. And, you know, it's a scramble play. He throws it up there to his running back. The running back starts crashing in on the ball. And then because he's doing that, the angle of the ball goes right over his head and the Rams defender's in a great spot. He's going to make the tackle and the ball's right in his hands and ends it. But, the Stafford trade has been great. I think the Odell Beckham signing has been fantastic for them as well. I thought I was going to hit my plus 1500 leading the, you know, leader in receiving yards. He had it there for a minute. Then Cooper Kupp busted off that big play there at the end for 30 yards or whatever it was. And pretty much put that to bed. But yeah, things are rolling right now for the Rams. They're looking good. Stafford, I mean, some of these plays that he's making and some of these throws he's making have been unbelievable. There was one that I think it was that Cooper Kupp one. He puts it right on the spot that he needs to, like literally the only spot that ball could have gone. And he puts it there, and Cooper Kupp catches it and takes it another 30 yards upfield. And it was just a great throw, great catch, great run. The defense is obviously – I think that's going to be the name of the game in the Super Bowl is that front line of Von Miller and Aaron Donald going up against a Bengals offensive line that we've just seen that has not been any good. And I think that's going to be the name of the game going into the Super Bowl.
Oh, and Leonard Floyd. Don't forget Leonard Floyd. He's a stud there too. Do you know the Rams didn't get any sacks yesterday?
Yeah, I know. That's shocking.
Yeah. And the thing about Stafford was doing this with the Lions. They were just bad. Like he was making great throws. They would just find ways to lose in Lions ways. Like this isn't, I don't people that have watched Stafford a lot and been Stafford fans and been saying he's a good quarterback. He's a good quarterback. Like, This is not surprising to people how he's been playing down the stretch here. Like this is what the Matt Stafford that you saw in Detroit was. He's just on a much better team. He's got a better coach than he had before. I'd say Jim Caldwell was a good coach for them. He took him to the playoffs, but after that, whenever they fired him, who did they get? Well, they got Patricia. He was terrible. It's just like he's got better players around him. And he's playing well. Like this is what you thought Matt Stafford was going to be like. And he's performed. He's validated to an extent the Rams because they won. Now they're in the Super Bowl. They're the same spot they were with Jared Goff in one season. They were like, all right, we're going to go to the Super Bowl. It was there. And yeah, it's for someone that's been a Stafford fan, I think it's pretty cool there. And yeah, Odell, he's been good. It's amazing to see what happens when a quarterback actually throws the ball to him when he's open, or not actually throws the ball to him, throws accurate passes to him when he's open. Like, I don't think anybody, when they were watching the Browns, thought that Odell was like washed or anything. He was still making good plays. I think his concentration level was a little bit down because there were multiple times when he threw, when Baker threw to him on third and fourth down, that he just blatantly dropped. And I don't think he's really had any, he might have had one or two drops with the Rams, but just like, oh, all right, let's get Odell in the game. And then he just drops which would be a game extending or a drive extending play, and he just drops it. So concentration level is down, and he clearly didn't want to play with Baker. So that's why he's out of there. But yeah, no, he's been great. I do see people like, oh man, I was never like mad Odell. Like, obviously I was hoping it would work out, but clearly it was not working out with Odell, and he's playing well. I'm not surprised by it. There's a lot of Browns fans that for this is like their worst case scenario, an NFC North team and Odell in the Super Bowl. I was like, why are you mad at Odell? Be mad at your quarterback who couldn't figure out a relationship with him for 3 years and get him the ball. Like, obviously Odell, part of it, he was part of the thing of not maybe working enough with Baker, but like, be mad at Baker for not being able to figure it out with Odell. Like, you have this here and you're just like, go watch the Vikings game and wonder why Odell wanted out there. Like, just put that game on, you'll be like, yeah, okay, that's why he doesn't want to play with Baker. But it's going to be interesting in the offseason too, because yeah, the Stafford trade, now everybody's going to be looking for like upgrades at quarterback no matter what you have, and teams are going to be making, there's no Stafford out minus say Rodgers, whatever he does, Deshaun Watson, what his deal is with the legal stuff, whatever. Russell Wilson, like he's how many first rounders are some people going to get for Wilson? Like, people are going to make, I think, blatant overreactions because of the Stafford situation when there's maybe one guy like that out there, and people are going to be trying to get Jimmy G. He's a winner out there, but he's not a Stafford. He still has his limitations. Cousins has his limitations. Derek Carr is probably not going anywhere with McDaniels getting hired. But there's going to be a lot of teams out there making some rash decisions, I think. Okay, here's the guy that I think would be comparable to Matt Stafford. Do you think that like a team would go overboard on Matt Ryan, even though Matt Ryan is older than Stafford? Stafford's still only 33.
Yes.
That's like the only comparison that I think I could be made for Stafford. Like, Russell Wilson's the same age, but I still think Russ is probably a little bit better than Stafford. But like, Matt Ryan's going to be 37 at the start of next season. He's been around a bad Falcons team the last, what, 3 years? You would say 2 or 3 years?
Yeah.
And so that's a guy that I would say, like, is a team going to do the Stafford trade that they did for Matt Ryan?
I can see that happening for sure. And I, you know, obviously not on the same level by any means, because they aren't necessarily the same quarterback, but you know, we see in back-to-back years, obviously Tom Brady, again, not the same thing, but it's Tom Brady going and changing teams changing the position. You know what I'm saying? Change teams and upgraded the position of a team and goes to the Super Bowl. Now we're seeing Matt Stafford do the exact same thing with another team. So I think seeing that back-to-back seasons, there definitely will be a team that will try to do the same thing, that thinks, hey, we're just a quarterback away. Who can we go out there and get? We don't want a young guy. We want somebody that's proven, established, that's maybe in a bad situation. So I could definitely see Matt Ryan being that type of guy. You know, you threw the name Kirk Cousins out there. Maybe he's another one. For sure, I think this could start a trend of teams trying to find guys and maybe going and overpaying a little bit for guys that they necessarily wouldn't have a couple years ago.
Yeah, and that's like really going to be interesting, because also teams that have, you would think, like competent starters would probably try and make those moves just to upgrade, because
100%, 100%.
So we'll have to see what's going on there. But I want to talk about the Jimmy G, like, last player. The Jimmy G takes were flying last night after the game. And look, he's proven that he's can win in the NFL. He does get injury prone a lot, but people definitely take way too much from like the last play of the game. Yes. Was he not good in the fourth quarter yesterday? No, he was not good, but he was also pretty good in the fourth quarter against the 49ers in the snow. He was decent against the Cowboys. He held on to a lead there, and then he drove him down the field against the Rams to get the team in the playoff. Like, one play when a guy's trying to make a play, and it was a bad play, don't get me wrong. Like, he probably should have just taken the sack. They should have called timeout and then trying to get, what, a third and convert on two plays, a third and 20 or whatever. It was not his best play, but just the rashness of, like, oh my God, Jimmy G stinks. That's such the worst play. Like, let's settle down here. Okay. They had a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter, and his coach let him down a lot too. Like, he didn't make the plays, but his coach also didn't help him out.
You know, it's kind of funny about that last play is I almost sent out a tweet saying, you know, in praise of Jimmy G, because he's actually really, really good at escaping pressure, getting outside the pocket and throwing the ball away. Like, I don't know if that's – I think it's a skill that you want your quarterback to have for sure, but he, like, seems, like, really good at it. And so I almost sent out a tweet saying, you know, I don't know if there's anybody in the league that's as good as Jimmy G as escaping the pocket just to get the ball and throw it out of bounds. Again, not an elite talent, not maybe a talent that you want to be able to highlight, but still a nice little, you know, nice club to have in the bag. And then that happens. It's like, poof, glad I didn't hit send on that one. But he can keep his head and keep his wits about him when he's under pressure, and he can get out of the pocket, and he's not looking to force the ball downfield. He's usually just looking to get it out of bounds and get another play, get to the, you know, sideline, or excuse me, get back to the line of scrimmage and snap it again. But, like you said, the takes were flying. Everyone wants to be, I don't know, I don't even know what the correct phrase would be, but everyone wants to be early on the Jimmy G takes. You know, I don't think he's a bad quarterback. I'd think he'd be an upgrade for Washington right now over Heinicke.
He
would be an upgrade over Heinicke for sure. So like I said, I wouldn't mind having him over there. He's not going to put us at risk, and he's still going to be able to, you know, put the ball in the right guy's hands and not make some errant throws. So again, yes, I would take Jimmy G over Taylor Heinicke right now. So I think if he lands in the right spot, he can still be very successful. I don't know if we're talking about him making to another conference championship game or, you know, make another Super Bowl run, but I think he could see some success as a starting quarterback.
Yeah, no, I agree. And he's definitely going to be gone. He's not going to be playing in San Francisco next year. I think we can say that for a fact after the end of the game yesterday, because you don't trade up to number three for a guy and then not play him the year after, the next year when that happens. I think Jimmy.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that Trey Lance is an upgrade over Jimmy G. That's obviously going to be yet to be seen.
Well, no one can say that now.
Correct, but you know, because I think if he was, he would have played.
Well, maybe they just wanted to sit him the whole year. I don't know. Was Jimmy G that bad down the stretch, though?
No,
I knew he was hurt.
I don't think so. But I think if Trey Lance was that good, I mean, we saw plenty of other rookie quarterbacks go out there and do a fine job. You know, say what you will about Justin Fields, I still think he is going to be a good quarterback. Again, a bad situation around him, bad coaching, you know, not a super talented team, but you know, like I said, a lot of the other quarterbacks, rookie quarterbacks, were good enough to play. And I think if Trey Lance was that guy, he would have.
He did play a couple of games when Jimmy G was pretty hurt.
Yeah. I mean, they ran a couple of the gadget plays or whatever, but you know, nonetheless, yeah. I think he would have been in there a little bit earlier and a little bit more often if he was as good as people think.
I don't know. We'll see. But I also think a lot of that too could just be on like locker room situations and stuff. Like, yeah, Everybody talks about how good a leader is Jimmy G is, and if he's healthy enough and he's got the whole team, that then sets up a locker room fracture of oh, they're starting Lance, we want Jimmy G, and you got that whole thing on, and that's not what you're looking for. I think it could have been more on that. All right, so Super Bowl. The line, we talked about it last week, it's up. It is the Rams -4. So I think last week, what did we say? It was -5.5 if this was going to be the Rams and the Bengals. So it's already down to 4. The total's 49. That opened up at 50. It's already dropped down there. I don't know about that, but I have been taking a look at some of the props already. We'll do our big prop thing next week. But one of the props I already know, I've already locked it in because I think the odds are going to change, is that how many players will have a pass attempt over 2.5. It's minus 105. I'm guaranteeing right now Odell throws a pass in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Guarantee Odell will throw a pass in the Super Bowl. So I love over 2.5 at minus 105 because I think that that is going to climb up.
Yeah, no, I like it. I know that's one of the fun ones we like to run back every year is seeing if somebody else, you know, throws a pass other than the two starting quarterbacks. And so I don't hate that play at all. I love it.
One of my other ones I like to run back is how many times will the chains be used for a measurement?
What's that at right now?
1.5 over at minus 110. They never bring up the chains. They never bring them out.
Yeah.
No, I haven't said that. We've got the... We like to hit the upright. That's up there. Oof. But I don't know if I'm taking anybody at the upright in this one.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Not with McPherson.
And Matt Gay. You know, maybe hit the crossbar, Matt Gay.
I think he'll come up short.
Yeah, exactly.
But other than that, I don't know. You got a bunch of commercial ones. Which one is first? The sacks is up. We got our sacks up. It's over 4.5. At minus 135.
For total for the game?
Yeah.
Over.
Yeah, I think I might wait. That's a lot of juice, though, but still, you would think over on that. What do we have? What else do we have going on here? Will a player be ejected for throwing a punch?
No.
Okay. This doesn't seem like good enough odds. Will a player propose to his girlfriend on the field after the game? Are there a lot of like post Super Bowl proposals?
Not that come to mind. I think we see that a lot more in college. I don't know about the NFL.
That's only plus 400. That no is minus 650.
Yeah, I feel like the odds would be much, much higher for no.
Yes. Yes. I would agree. And I think yes should be in like the plus 900s.
Yeah. Plus 1,000 at least.
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, those are just the one I wanted to say about the pass. Well, a roughing the passer one. This has always been a hot topic of whatever. It's only a plus 105. Will there be a roughing the passer called?
Probably.
You would assume so.
I think so. At least one.
Yep. Yeah. So, all right. There's a couple. We'll talk more about those next week. Still waiting for my favorite is the over-under on punting yardage. If you've listened for a while, I love a good over-under on the punts. It's an electric, electric bet, for sure. All right. Also the NFL big news on Saturday. Well, allegedly Tom Brady's going to retire. If Schefter gets this wrong though, I mean, he's got to have some I know I've been bagging on Schefter for a while. And then a lot of people have joined the party. But if he gets this one wrong, and Jeff Darlington's like his dude, so I mean, I do think Brady's probably going to end up retiring. He just wants to do it on his own accord. He didn't want it out like this because Jason Lockenfora Friday said he's going to probably announce his retirement sometime next week. But if he just wants to go out of spite and play next year, Schefter gets it wrong. Like that's his contract's up with ESPN. There's rumors about where he's going to go. If he's going to stay at ESPN, he's going to go to Caesars or some gambling company or whatever. This is a bad look by Schefter if he's wrong.
Yeah, you know, especially coming off the heels of the Jimmy G tweet, everyone was kind of saying this is why you tweet out the stuff about Jimmy G because then you can get the Tom Brady scoops. Well, if the scoops are wrong, then now you're just a mouthpiece for agents and, you know, a bozo for getting stuff like this wrong. You were quick to do a little victory lap because I said,
Whoa, that wasn't me.
Oh, wasn't you?
No, that's our social media manager.
Oh, okay. Funny. I mean, you retweeted it. So you were, you know, obviously
I just saw it. I retweet funny things that come across my timeline.
Yeah. Funny how that happens. So wasn't completely wrong. You know, we're yet to see what the situation is. So if he comes back, make sure you tell the social media manager to send that out again and say Ryan was all over it because he was correct. And nonetheless, I just didn't see him going out the way they did. Cause you know, if they're healthy, I think they have a bit more of a fighting chance. If the whole AB thing doesn't happen, I think they are definitely, you know, in a better spot, but
you know, Tom Brady's also the type too that when he goes out, he's going to do it on his own. And I think it is kind of funny if he does go out, it's a day after Roethlisberger officially announces his retirement. He does this whole retirement parade charade thing, and everyone is praising him and saying what a great quarterback he was and what a great guy he was throughout his career, which again, we talked about, is completely false. And then Brady just kind of cucks him right out of it and retires a day and a half after, which probably meant Gronk is going to retire too. So it's going to be the Gronk and Brady show 5 years from now in Canton, and Roethlisberger is kind of going to be an afterthought.
Roethlisberger might not even make it on the first ballot.
Oh, he's a first ballot guy.
I mean, some of the guys elsewhere that could get shuffled down the line, he might just get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd be willing to put money that Roethlisberger is a first ballot guy.
I would think so, but you never know. You get more guys. And who else, you know, that retires this year could end up being a Hall of Famer.
You got to remember, though, too, it's not baseball writers voting him in. So since he, you know, he was a quote unquote good guy, he's probably going to get in.
It's still NFL writers, though, and they do some questionable things.
Yeah.
The thing about Brady is why you hear what he says after the game. And then you see some of the quotes from the pod. I didn't even know he does a podcast with Jim Gray, but he does a saying about like his family, he's missing his kids growing up and everything. The guy's been doing this for 22 years. He's 44. Like he doesn't have anything else to prove.
Yeah.
Like, so what is the big deal if he ends his career on that game against the Rams? He could say, you know what, we took advantage of the Rams' mistakes and we came back from 27-3 to tie it up, and I lost. We did what we could. Like, what is him coming back next year prove? He already proved he could win a Super Bowl without Belichick. That was probably the biggest thing on his checklist that he wanted to do. And yeah, they got unlucky with injuries, the Antonio Brown situation and things like that. They weren't the same team as they were last year. But he doesn't have anything else to prove. And why does he want to put his body through what he makes it go through to go through another season when he's going to be 45? Like,
how awesome would it be that if he does retire, he just blows up to like 300 pounds?
Because that would be great.
Eat avocado ice cream anymore. He just gets super fat.
I don't think that's going to be Roethlisberger, though.
Well, for sure. But like, I think it'd be awesome. Like Brady, when Brady gets in a can, he's going to look like an offensive lineman.
Yes, that's that would be good. It's like the reverse Jeff Saturday and Joe Thomas. They lose absolutely. Like 60 pounds.
Yeah.
Brady gained 60 pounds. But he's just, to me, he's got nothing else. I mean, he doesn't have anything to prove. So why are you going to go through, if you're talking about all this stuff about your family and everything and you want to be there now, we'll probably like take a year or two off and be like, damn, I don't like hanging out with my family like all these other players say. As much, like, seriously.
No,
like,
it happens. No, I know.
It happens all the time. Derek Fisher. All the coaches, I want to spend time with my family. They're back in a year coaching because guess what? They don't like spending time with their family that much. It's not really a surprise. He could come back and play again, but I think that he is just he's just ready to hang out. And I also don't think he likes Bruce Arians. Like, I think the Bucks, if they want to have a hope of keeping Brady, they should say, you know what, Bruce, you're 72, whatever you are. Why don't we just work a mutual parting of ways? We want to keep Byron Leftwich. Let's keep Byron Leftwich, promote him to be the head coach. I think Brady likes Leftwich more and do that. But that's, I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, yeah, to a point, because Arians doesn't kind of play the favorites, kind of play the coddle game that maybe Belichick played a little bit more. So, you know, Brady likes to have his way. And I think he's been given a lot of rope to do what he wants there. But, you know, I wouldn't totally disagree with that take.
He's been given way more rope than anything the Patriots did to him. That's for sure. But I also think Arians has just gone off the deep end this past year, like pushing a player against the Bucks when they were like, oh, he slapped him. Good job on the helmet. Like, no, he wasn't. That was like that was an anger. Like, I think Arians is he's just gone off the plot there. So then that opens up another spot for a quarterback. What happens there if he does end up
running back with Jameis?
That would be pretty funny, wouldn't it?
That would be awesome.
That would be pretty funny there. So we'll have to see if he does that. I guess he's out of the country, so who knows when he's going to. What if he just announces retirement like the morning of the Super Bowl? Now, the NFL would probably say, hey, don't do that. But that would be pretty funny.
Yeah, it would be.
All right. Anything else NFL wise that we got out there?
I think that was it. I think, you know, we hit all the main points there.
All right. Did you know the Olympics start on Thursday?
Yeah, actually Jamie's the one that's brought that to my attention. Cause we were watching something and I said something about like, oh yeah, the Olympics are this year. She goes, yeah, bro, they start next week. I was like, oh wow. Didn't know. Didn't realize it.
Yes. The Olympics are next, starting on Thursday.
Yeah. The 4th or something.
Yeah. The opening, there's curling starting on the 3rd and then, opening ceremony starting on the 4th. Listen to this. This scene, I'm looking, I clicked the Olympics. You're going to do betting. We did this. USA gold medals. What do you think their total is? Now, obviously, they're not the favorites to win the most medals. That's Norway. Norway's minus 400 in the total medal count. The USA is plus 1,400 in most gold medals. And then to win the medal count, they're also plus 1,400. Norway is minus 400 and then 800 overall medals. What do you think the USA total gold medal is?
40 and a half.
Golds?
Yeah.
No, they don't have that many events. It's like significantly less events.
Okay, so...
Because their total medals is 23 and a half.
Oh, wow. So like 6?
8.5.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's plus 115. Which seems. Now I'm looking at 2018, the Olympic medal count. Here we go. Let's do some research here. The U.S. in 2018 was 4th in the medal count. Where were the Olympics in 20? Oh, they were in South Korea. And they got 23 medals and they got 9 gold. So pretty much they got to win one more medal and win the same amount of gold as they did.
Didn't they take the gold in curling that year?
They did. The men, a great comeback, an unexpected gold medal.
Exactly. So that, you know, you got to factor that in a little bit. So maybe you take the under.
Maybe the under's 150 on both.
Wow.
That's a lot of juice.
Yeah, that is.
That is a lot of juice. Norway. So the Norway led last year or last Olympics with 39 medals and they won 14 gold. So there's a significantly less amount of, medals up for grabs. This year, their total is going to be, where are we at? They don't have them up here. So that's cool. Germany was in second. They're at 24 medals. Last Olympics, they won 31. There's also no men's. The NHL players are not going to play hockey because they got to make up all the games from the Rona. And it also seemed like if you did go over there and you were an NHL guy, you weren't going to get paid by your team. A lot of things over there that weren't working out. But the men's hockey, the U.S. is sending over some minor leaguers and college dudes, I guess. But I think that was.
Are there any washed up NHLers? Like, you know, there's a couple years ago when they didn't send NHL guys. They still had some dudes that were like fresh out of the NHL.
Let's take a look at the men's roster. So we will take a look so I can answer that question.
Yeah, I'm looking right now. Don't see a single
name. Brian O'Neill and Steve Kampfer. They got to be washed up guys because they were born in 88. I'm going by the birth year. 87, Pat Nagel. He was born in 87. And there's another 1988er. So Andy Mealy.
Who was, okay, I'm trying to remember.
They play in the KHL. So, but those got to be like washed up guys, I guess, because they're, I'm just going by birth year there in the 80s. And I guess 1990, Aaron Ness, he's in the AHL. He's 32.
Brian O'Neill, yeah, he never been in the NHL.
Really?
Let me see. He went to Yale. Yeah, he's played for the Manchester Monarchs. So, okay, so he played 1 year for the, well, he played 22 games for the Devils in 2015 and has been in the KHL since then. I can't remember the really short dude. He played for the Rangers. He was like 5'5".
Martin St. Louis?
Yeah, maybe it was him.
He was Canadian.
Okay, then it wasn't him. I don't remember. There was one guy that I remember him. Like I said, he was on the NHL or excuse me, on the USA team. He was fresh out of the NHL. I don't know. It's not that big of a deal, but I was just curious if we had any guys like that. But it doesn't look to be the
case. Well, no, one of these guys, I just clicked on his bio. It's born in 92, Kenny Agostino. He played for, he was drafted in 2010. He played for the Maple Leafs last year, was up and down in the minors, then played for the Canadiens, Bruins, Blues, Flames in the NHL.
Okay.
So he's kind of like a journeyman type of guy, but was bouncing up between that. So I don't think any strict just NHL guys that are, there's no like, hey, this is Glory's last shot or whatever. We're playing in the Olympics, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that gets underway. Well, should be interesting to watch. And then one last thing, I was watching this yesterday morning. I just watched the fifth set, but we had the tennis, the Australian Open. Nadal, now he won yesterday, beat Medvedev in five sets, came down from 0-2. He's now got 21 majors, the most majors, broke the three-way tie with Federer and Djokovic, both have 20. And Nadal, I guess it was pretty surprising he played, because I guess he had knee surgery like a month and a half ago, and he didn't know if he was going to play. But he won it, and it is pretty amazing. I know tennis obviously isn't that big here in the U.S. People watch the majors here and there. But, like, we all talk about, like, oh, we want to watch greatness. We want to watch greatness. Well, three of the greatest tennis players of all time literally played at the same time, and they won a combined 61 majors.
Yeah.
Like, that really is unbelievable. I don't even know what to compare it to. Maybe in golf, if, like, Jack and Tiger were playing at the same time, and Jack won his 18 majors and Tiger won his 14, and you're just like, wow, they just win pretty much like every major, alternating, going back and forth. And Andy Murray might win four or five here or there, however many some guy comes. Like, it really is unbelievable, that greatness. Three of the greatest players, tennis players of all time, played at the same time. That's pretty. And Djokovic isn't done. He's going to win probably a couple majors. Don't know. He might, by his own personal choice, limit how many he could win in a year, depending on the rules for the other major. It doesn't sound like he's going to play in the French Open unless they change their rules. But it's pretty remarkable how this era of tennis, we have greatness, and it's kind of gone under the radar, mainly, I would say, because one of the guys is an American.
Yeah, that point right there is what it really is. Because I think any true sports fans, or is definitely tennis fans, I think realize the run of greatness we had with Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic, but because none of them are American, it maybe doesn't get quite the hype that it would for a generic sports fan that might tune in for tennis every now and then.
Yeah, I would agree. But man, the tennis yesterday morning, the fifth set, was some high quality stuff. This Medvedev guy, he won the U.S. Open, I think, this year. He's got some personality to him. He's an incredible tennis player. He just got unlucky. Yeah, he did ask Rafa Nadal yesterday after the second set how he got the energy to fight back. And Nadal didn't really answer, which would like to know that, because I guess from at the end of the second set, it looked like he was down and out, and somehow he came back to win. But that's the second time in a row that Medvedev's been a finalist. He just got one major right now, but that was it's pretty impressive that those three guys are up there in the tennis world.
Agree. Right. Yeah, agree.
All right, do you have anything else?
No. Since we're on tennis, shout out Ash Barty, the women's finalist winner for the Australian Open. The Australian Open final started at 12:30 Vegas time, so your boy was able to catch that, watch that whole thing. That was a good match. The girl, she beat Danielle Collins. She's got a new fan in your boy. She's an American. She's got a new fan, but shout out Ash Barty. She cashed a ticket for me, so we were riding with her.
That's good. I'll also say women's U.S. tennis looks like it's on the comeback. I think they had five women in the quarterfinals. The Bills owner's daughter, Pegula, she was in there. I think I saw a tweet there, like four or five. women in there. So U.S. women's tennis could be on the comeback. And well, since we're on the off sports of the singles, the golf was on Saturday night. Don't think you saw any of this, but Zalatoris.
Boof.
He's got to fix the putting is an issue, obviously. Brutal. His putting was, and I want to give him some credit because I didn't think Sunday like he putted bad. His lag putting was very good. He left a couple dead in the heart. He didn't miss any putts inside of 4 feet the whole day, and that's kind of his kryptonite. Just the look of his stroke is hard to watch. It looks like he's gonna miss almost every single putt from like 4 feet. You feel more comfortable when he's out there like 10, 15 feet rather than inside of 5 feet. You probably didn't see his numbers, but on the third round, which was Friday, I want to keep calling it Saturday, but Friday, he shot 67. I think it was a bogey free 67. On 14 approaches. So 14 of the 18 holes, he had birdie putts inside of 17 feet. Do you have a guess on how many he made?
One.
Seven. Come on.
Okay. I don't know. I was going for something, you know, pretty drastic.
But he did miss a birdie putt from 4 feet, and he did miss a birdie putt from like 3 feet. So he did miss two inside five. But he had seven birdies. He had 14 chances to make birdie from 17 feet and in, and he made half of them, which is not great. It's an incredible ball striking round. I think he gained seven shots on the field from approach. But in the proximity of the hole that day for guys was like 36 feet, and his was like 25 feet. Like an incredible ball striking day. He's just got to get the putter going, and he'll be fine. But that's just a tough scene to watch him putt.
Yep, agreed.
Great finish though to the tournament. And one thing I would hopefully that this was like the second biggest tournament that he's got a runner up in, because you know he did get a runner up in the Masters. We need CBS. Needs to stop saying every time the guy comes on TV, every time he shows a shot or every 10th shot, that he plays golf with Tony Romo. That it's unnecessary. It is not needed that he plays golf with Tony Romo back in the house. Okay. They did a little player profile, and you know, like the three bullet points they have. Under it says resides in Dallas, Texas. It says plays golf with Tony Romo. Who cares? Okay. Nobody cares that he plays golf with Romo. Let's separate Romo from Will Zalatoris and Zalatoris from Romo. Like let's let the guy leave on his own. But all right, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll be back next week.